Get in, losers. We're watching It, Welcome to Derry, Episode 5, titled Kneebolt Street. The day has finally arrived. Our boy is back. Pennywise finally shows up in all of his glory. My name is Eric Vespi.
I'm Anthony Bresnikan.
And we're going to talk about that. But before we do, we have to say a word about our sponsor. This episode of Watching It, Welcome to Derry is brought to you by Blackmagic Design, the makers of the cameras and post-production tools behind some of the most cinematic horror you've ever seen. Bold claim, but true, or so they tell us. And one of the companies that helped create the It universe, by the way, with Blackmagic's DaVinci Resolve used for post-production in both It and It Chapter 2. It's also been used for other good stuff like The Substance, Final Destination Bloodline, Screamboat Willie, Long Legs, 28 years later. I almost said days later. That would have had to use some time travel to make that happen. and also, not the best looking of all the ones, so definitely good that they were in the 28 years later era. Hollywood level power without the Hollywood price. Learn more at blackmagicdesign.com.
Perfect name for a company that conducts so much mayhem and bloodshed.
Yes.
That old black magic.
Yeah, it's appropriate. So,
thank you. Thank you to our wonderful sponsors. We appreciate you.
Yeah, definitely, man. And okay, so there's a whole lot to talk about with this episode. I think this is a huge step up from where we've been. But again, that kind of, I don't want to like totally knock the last few episodes, because the reason why this is effective is because so many of these pieces have been moved into place, right?
Yeah, we're going down the well today. We're in the lair, in the hall of the underworld king. Pennywise.
Yeah, literally. I can tell you at the beginning of this episode, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Because the first 5 minutes is like, hey, Marge is alive. Hey, Maddie's alive. Hey, Phil's probably still alive. And I'm just like, oh man, this is gonna, wait a minute.
It's turning into a Marvel movie all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, is there no consequences to anything anymore? God damn it. Mm-hmm. Like back in my day, it actually killed the kids it followed.
Pennywise is going soft.
He's going soft on us. But we come to find out the truth behind some of that, and it's probably my favorite reveal since the first episode, since the pilot, where you go, oh, and by the way, all these kids are getting mauled in the theater, right? I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've watched the episode. If you haven't, then shame on you. We're going to spoil the fuck out of it. So,
what are you doing here if you haven't watched it?
Yeah. Come on now. So we should start with the reveal of Maddie. So, all the kids, like, you know, kind of get together. Marge, she was saved from being sawed in half by Lily. And she apparently has told everybody. It's like, no, Lily actually saved me, whatever. So that cliffhanger that I was saying last episode made me feel a little icky of like, oh man, it just makes me feel bad seeing like the wrongfully accused thing happen over and over again. I guess it's kind of being washed away pretty quickly with Marge going, no, by the way, she didn't do anything. We'll see how that actually works within the school system itself.
Well, it seems to play as a character shift for Marge, because Marge has been a finger pointer so far, and it even if it doesn't pay off in terms of like a big drama surrounding whether Lily attacked her or not, it helps ingratiate Marge to us and redeems her a bit. So that I thought that was a good turn of the plot.
Right. And she's a trooper, like, she stabs her own eye out or whatever the hell she did, and like, she's right there with the bandage. She's now joined up with our gang, and it's like, I'm going to help you, you know, find this thing. And then they are joined by another person, Maddie. So they go up to the standpipe to have their little meeting and decide what they're going to do, and there's a tent and a mysterious hand, and who's in the tent but the little boy from the first episode, or so we think.
Yeah, the one who met the... We saw him with the weird family getting taken away in a snowy night, and that weird mutant baby lashed out at him. But we didn't see him actually die. We saw some of those other kids torn limb from limb in the movie theater. And you know, Eric, one of the things this episode made me realize, I guess I just didn't clock this before. I assumed the bodies of those kids were found. Mm. That, Lily is holding the hand of the little sister, and she's still holding it after the hand is separated from the little sister. I just figured the authorities are going to go in, they're going to see this bloodshed and these bodies there, and that's why they're accusing Hank Grogan of, like, axe murder, essentially. Right. Either I missed it and it just went over my head, or it was left ambiguous. But this episode tells us those kids weren't found at all. The hand was found and the blood was there. So there's an indicator that something really catastrophic happened, but the bodies aren't found.
Right.
So there is a question.
Georgie, right? Because that's exactly what happened with Georgie. Yeah. And at least in the Muschietti universe, I think that the Muschietti. I've said Muschietti my entire career, even after meeting those people. And now, it wasn't until they came on the KingCast and you introduced them as Muschietti. I'm like, oh, he screwed that up.
Listen.
And then I'm like, oh, no, I've been the one messing that up the whole time. So.
Well, you know the famous Bill Hader story about him, right?
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
Mispronouncing a name. So when they were shooting the scene in the Chinese restaurant, the famous scene where what is that, the Jade Rose?
The Jade Orient, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. The grown-up losers come back and they're hanging out, they're reconnecting and they're partying. And Andy urged everybody to, like, kind of get up and move around. And he's like, dance, Bill, dance. Dance like dirty dancing. Dance like Patrick Swayze. So Bill has told this story. I'm doing a bad impression of Bill doing a bad impression, or a pretty good impression of Andy Muschietti. Yeah. But essentially, I'm sure Andy will forgive you if you mispronounce his name now and then. Mm-hmm. He has a habit of doing that himself with Patrick Swayze.
Swayze. Yeah. So, those in glass houses, Andy, goddammit. I think in the book they actually don't they find Georgie's body? I think that they talk about, like, and they have a funeral
with a missing arm. Yeah, they have a funeral.
Yeah. So that's become a little bit of a theme, because that was something I remember, visiting the set of the first It back in the Ain't It Cool days, and they told us then, it's just like, oh, well, at a certain point, Bev gets kidnapped. They told us everything about, about the movie. They didn't hold back. And I remember, I don't know if they said Bev got kidnapped. They said that somebody gets taken by Pennywise at some point, but they also revealed that Bill thinks that Georgie might still be alive. And I remember reporting that back to Wampler and going, hey, so this is what I've heard. And he's like, oh, this movie's going to be ass. What a terrible thing. But it actually works within the context of the movie. It gives Bill something, to fight for other than, this is the thing that killed my brother. Like, he still...
Vengeance, yeah.
He still...
Rescue. Rescue is a greater motivator than vengeance, yeah.
Well, and once again, it's that bullshit kids logic that I love in this so much, where the adults are like, they have it right in this. They're like, no, he's dead. It's like, his arm isn't going to be, he isn't going to be washed into the sewers and just, like, living like Jason Voorhees, off of animals in the woods or whatever, It's like, we would have found him. And that's true. But it is that kid logic of, I haven't seen a body, so he might still be alive out there. At the beginning of this, I was a little like, there's just three reveals back to back to back. It's like, Marge is okie dokie. She's now part of the group. Hey, surprise, Maddie's alive, and he escaped Pennywise somehow. And he says, Phil was alive the last time he saw him. Phil being one of the kids that we thought died in the movie theater, right? He's the taller one. And he's the one that I've seen some speculation on the internet, I guess because he, in the supermarket scene, he appeared on the cereal box, where all the other kids were zombified on the cereal box in the Pennywise vision, except for him. He's just like a kid happily eating his cereal. So I've seen some fan speculation of like, oh, that's a hint saying that he's actually still alive and it's going to be a big surprise. And so with all those reveals back to back, I'm like, oh man, they're just like, I don't know, they're undoing some of the grossness and all this stuff. And which ultimately that meant that I stepped into their trap, believing exactly like what they wanted us to believe, and then the actual reveal comes towards the end of the episode.
Yeah. I like that kind of, you create this ambiguity and you let the audience make an assumption. Yeah. You know, they didn't mislead. I think that's a clever way of leaving breadcrumbs that lead you astray. It's like a red herring, essentially, in a mystery novel.
Yeah. No, for sure, and it's very effective. And I gotta say, I like the way that this, you know, the '60s losers club essentially is being constructed here. I like the personalities. I like getting that, you know, dynamic. The girl who was on the precipice of being the bully is now full-fledged there. I like the way they look, you know. I like, you got the short Cuban kid and you got the girl with the 60s horn rim glasses but an eye patch because, you know, she's already you know, suffered at the hands of Pennywise. And you got the girl that's on the precipice of breaking mentally, you know. And talk about the kid's logic. I want to touch on this in a little bit later, but I also love that they just keep doubling down on these magic feel-good pills. It's like, this is our way to fight this thing.
That is I think it's kind of a hilarious thing. I'm surprised they did it, just because, like, you've got to figure somebody's like, we don't want kids to actually take their parents' medication from the, you know, let's not put this in there. I'm sure there was some lawyer somewhere who was like, do we have to include this? But, you know, there was something meaningful in this episode, too, that I don't think is often easy to talk about. It's all, it's a big part of coming of age stories, but it's uncomfortable. And I think that's the thing that we all learn as we get older, that you're raised to think your mom and dad always have your best interest at heart. Your teachers are there to take care of you. You can count on the police if you're in trouble. Like, as you get older, you start to realize these are just human beings too. And to varying degrees, they might have your best interest at heart. They might be completely malignant and toxic as well. Right. And when they realize we can't count on the police to help us, even if we have these photos, they're going to dismiss them. Even if we have, if we tell the truth, they're going to say we're crazy. And I think that happens to kids. It happens in societies where a breakdown happens, where you just go, oh, actually, I'm kind of on my own here. Right. The institutions we've been told are there to protect us are not. They're there to protect themselves. I mean, I don't know if we want to leap into the political sphere, but I think that's happening in our country at the moment, where people go, oh, things we used to think of as independent and nonpartisan can really be weaponized. And in a smaller scale or in a fantastical scale, these kids who are trying to fight a supernatural child-eating shapeshifter are encountering that. Is, I can't trust my parents with this. They're going to think I'm nuts. I can't tell the cops. They're going to think what they're going to think. They're going to dismiss us. And but they can tell each other, you know?
Right.
And I think even when you see, I'm leaping ahead here, when you see Giovanna Depo's character Leroy tell his wife Charlotte, something's in this town, we got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I just need you to believe me. That's an important note that shows their trust in each other.
Right.
And it helps that she saw that sort of creepy Lester Maddox type cop in the window, looking like a sweaty Southern sheriff that probably she saw knocking the heads of Black Americans who were trying to get their civil rights back when she was an activist in the South. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that helped, helped her believe him. Yeah, like I've seen it too.
And she almost witnessed, you know, the town that at this point had been, you know, kind of painted as a progressive northern town. You know, the mob was gathering out there, and I mean, the Ronnie's father almost gets outsidered, right? He almost has the angry father that believes he killed his kids. You know, almost assassinates him and is stopped at the last minute. Part of the adult story that here, there's so many reveals in this episode, and one of them is with the indigenous people early on, and I think this is one that could be missed if you're not really paying attention, but they're having a meeting, and they're talking about a couple of things. One, they kind of say, hey, by the way, this cycle has actually been calmer and less bloody than the previous two, which is obviously, you know, them going, hey, you think this is crazy? Wait till we get to seasons 2 and 3 as we go back in the cycles, right? But they also say they're having a conversation about how the entity discharges and sheds its form and leaves that in the water supply, and that's how it infects the citizens of Derry.
I believe the quote was, we know it shits, right? Isn't that okay. What they say?
Oh, yeah. I thought it said sheds, but, you know, if it shit, if they're literally eating Pennywise's shit and drinking Pennywise's shit, that's funny.
Did he say sheds? I heard shits, and I was like, that's a blunt way to put it. I'm going to have to go back and check the closed captions on it, because I heard shits.
Yeah.
We know it shits. And I'm like, this is maybe more about Pennywise than I wish to know, but sheds is interesting. Sheds is fascinating.
Sheds could be. I mean, shits makes more sense in a way because we've seen it change forms and it doesn't leave anything behind. We haven't seen that. Of course, we haven't seen it take a shit either, but, you know, it's eating all these kids. Somehow, like, some of those nutrients are, you know, got it.
You know what Pennywise needs is a little more fiber.
He's got to eat some more straw boys from the Weird Al.
Eat a couple of scarecrows, you know, just sort of, you know, stay regular. I heard shits, and I didn't like that. I was like, this is, I don't care for that notion. But the idea, sheds, okay. You've turned it around for me because I like that a lot better.
It does. I mean, listen, it makes a little bit of sense, you know, as you, it's been established a little bit that it's not just in the runoff, mm-hmm. right, in the sewers, right, that there's like a refinement area, at least in the miniseries and I think in the book. You know, that it's more in the water purification, the water refinement is where it was versus just the shitty gray water established in the Muschietti films. So I mean, it would make sense. I kind of like the hold that it has over the town being a little bit more ambiguously magical versus, oh, this is just a side effect of you know, us drinking, or that town drinking contaminated water. I don't know. We'll see how it actually plays out. It might just be a theory, but a couple of things are revealed like back to back in that moment. This is an episode of reveals, which gives a little urgency and you know, fun. But
I have to say I'm a little torn on that possibility because I like the idea that human beings are partly responsible for Pennywise, rather than I was being polluted or I was mesmerized. Right. I like the idea that their own, not that I like bigotry or prejudice or hatred, but like the notion that we have agency, you know, that the people are making these choices and they're actually terraforming this place for it, that it makes people maybe a little more crazy, a little more cruel, but people have to be responsible for themselves too. You can't just say the devil made me do it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I wonder how much of it is going to be them saying like, oh, this is why people are evil, or if this is more an explanation of why people, like once they get away from the contaminated water, why they forget and, you know, maybe that's it. I don't know. That's the kind of danger with doing a prequel show like this, and that's over-explaining things and feeling the need to find things to over-explain, where it's like, did we really need to know this? I don't know. I mean, maybe it plays out in a way that we haven't seen developed yet, but, you know, it's definitely something it struck me as a little weird and more of a, this is curious than, oh, this is exciting, so...
I think about it in terms of like of Aunt Gladys from Weapons, to use a more recent example, or Norman Bates in Psycho. Mm. Let's use that one because that's older and we won't spoil anything for people. But in both cases, you want there's uncertainty about why the monster, why the villain does what it does. Mm-hmm. And you want the audience to be intrigued by that and to ask questions and want the answers. But sometimes by giving the answers, you can nullify the mystique, right? You could dispel what's magical about them. And in Norman Bates's case, you know, there's that famous closing scene where a psychiatrist or a psychologist we've never met in the story steps forth, and the final act does a kind of Sherlock Holmes by the fireplace breakdown of like, here's what was at work in his mind, and like he explains it all. And the very next shot is Norman just in his cell looking wild, and a fade out that fades in a little bit of like a skull over his face.
Right.
And what I love about what Hitchcock did there is he's like, you want answers? Here are some answers, but there's more to this. Is that a satisfying answer? And it's like Hitchcock saying, maybe not. Maybe there is something just sort of darkly twisted about him that we cannot, it is just like trying to understand the mind of a lizard. Like it is just almost an alien species. Right. And so with it, I don't mind, this is the long way around saying, I don't mind that the show and that fans are trying to guess about feel around the borders of Pennywise. Like, does he shed? Does he shit? Does he pollute this world? Is he merely benefiting from the natural cruelty that human beings generate all by themselves? Mm-hmm. I don't mind that they're testing it. And I love that the Native Americans have come up with their own solutions. Mm-hmm. And the kids come up with their own ideas. Like, well, if we take this sort of calming drug that our moms take, maybe we will not feel fear. Like, it's okay to feel around the edges, but I don't want that to come into too sharp a focus, you know?
Right. No, I agree. And I mean, and one thing that I'm really appreciative, especially in this episode, is we're seeing how much of that doesn't work. Right. And I like the idea of like, we're going to put forth all these theories, and nope, we're wrong. You know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, I love it when that happens in movies. You know, sometimes you can pull a Tremors and get away with just going, we don't know where these things came from. And everybody has a conversation and goes, I think they came from outer space. I think they've been here this whole time. You know, I think they're prehistoric, you know, it's like, and that's all you need, you know, but I do love it when people like, oh, this is for sure what's going to happen. This is for sure going to work. And then shit's like, no, that's not how any of this plays out.
And then it blows up in their face, yeah. That Tremors thing is what Hitchcock did. It's like, you want answers? Here's a variety of answers. Like, take your pick.
Right.
But we're not going to say for sure.
Right.
And some things work. Like, well, the kids did that in King's novel, you know? Mm-hmm. Hey, he takes the shape of a werewolf. Maybe silver will wound it. Because that's the rules of a werewolf. If it relies on our belief system, then maybe if we believe this, we can harm it. And I like when that proves to be true, and it's also cool when it backfires. I mean, but that's what human beings have done since humans have existed throughout evolution. Is okay. Here's a natural phenomenon. What is this fiery orb in the sky that rises and falls? Where does it go? Like, we come up with answers in our heads, and then we test them, and then we find out the truth is nothing like what we thought. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting to be confronted with a menacing question mark and still not know quite how to resolve it.
Right. So before we get into the kids stuff, we should talk about the military plot here. So we had the last episode ended with Halloran finding out all about, you know, he, you know, kind of, forced himself into that poor dude's mind, who, by the way, that guy was in The Long Walk. I didn't realize that until recently, but.
Yeah.
Dude in The Long Walk too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, killing it in 2 Stephen King adaptations. Congrats this year. So the military thinks they know where these artifacts are, if you can get these artifacts, you can contain the evil. If you can contain the evil, you know, it said, what if we, you know, could have dropped this thing, you know, and let it do all of our work for us, you know, for the latest conflict, that kind of thing. Dumb idea, you know, how the hell do you contain it afterwards, right? But, you know, that's the military thought. But one thing I really like here is that Rose confronts James Remar's character about this, and he's like, well, we already know where they are. We're at Nebold Street. We're going to this. And then she goes, oh. And she goes, and so my read on this isn't like, oh my God, they found our totems. It's these fucking idiots, and they're going to go into its lair. And her response to that is, and he's like, we're going to take your nephew with us. And she goes, okay. And she goes and gives him the dagger, going, this will protect you, you know. Good luck to all the rest of you white guys, you know, going in there, you know, yeah. Good luck to the military dudes.
Now that you mentioned he's from The Long Walk, I wanted to say his name, Joshua Odjick.
Yeah.
Odjick. Right. Yeah. He was pretty wonderful in The Long Walk. And yeah. I think he's really great here. He's a First Nations person from Canada. Can you say Native American if they're Canadian?
Native North American? Indigenous. I think, you know, I've heard, I don't know if it's a widespread thought, but you know, I've heard that most indigenous folks are moving away from the native name, but yes.
And some just prefer Indian, you know, yeah. Like that's a thing too. It's like, we're just Indians. Just call us Indians. We're used to it now. So anyway, we always like to be honorable here on our show, and but Joshua Odjick, thanks for pointing out that he was from The Long Walk. I didn't make that connection, but I'll say that's a testament to the actor for being a shapeshifter himself.
He worked it. So, but I do like this thought where the military, they think that they know. It's like, okay, this is it. This is our mission. We're getting together our elites to go in there. Dick Halloran's going in. You know, Jovan's character, Leroy, he's going in. Like, this is what they've all been there for, right? To go get this thing. And Rose is just like, oh, you fucking idiots. You know? It's like, well,
now,
you know. Yeah.
Do you think she's setting them up? Is she like, fuck around and find out? Like, okay, let's go. Let's send you down there. And she gives this shard to her nephew, played by Joshua, and she's going to protect him. But does she want them to get wiped out?
I think that she knows that there's nothing she could say to stop. And she's done everything at this point to try to keep them away from the lair, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm misreading it. Maybe, you know, the totems are actually down there too. But the way I'm reading this is, he's like, how, we got the totems, like, we beat you, you know, you can't hide these anymore. And she, her reaction to that is like, oh, so you're going into the Nebold. Oh, okay. You know, and then she's like, hold on a sec, I gotta go get something from my nephew. And she, when she passes it off, she's like, this will protect you, you know, when the stuff goes down, it's going to go down, you know, you'll be fine. So
why do they think the totems can be found in the tunnels when didn't Halloran see that they were burying them?
I think he saw they were burying them, but like when he was like, where, you know, remember at the end of the episode, he, you know, the nephew points, Joshua points out the door to Nebold Street. Maybe, you know, maybe that's true. Maybe they can't be found in there. I mean, I guess if they buried them and they built the sewer system, you would imagine they would have been disrupted, you know, because they didn't bury them like 80 feet deep. You know, we saw they just kind of buried them like little shallow. Yeah. Shallow thing. So I don't know. My guess is that they're not down there, but she realized that they thought that going into its lair is going to be where they can find the.
Well, they found it, but they didn't find the totems, or it found them, I guess. What did you? So what did you think about the way it manifested itself to these soldiers?
Well, and this leads me to like one of the big questions that I have about this episode, and that is, how powerful is the entity behind it? Because you know, we'll reveal one of the big twists here is that Maddie was Pennywise all along. He's dead, and he's been with these kids as Penny. You know, Pennywise has made this manifestation of Maddie. Has been hanging out with our group for the entire fucking episode. Yet at the same time, when the soldiers go in, he appears as the evil Uncle Sam. You know, he traps Halloran. You know, in this, you know, weird like memory slash you know, warning slash whatever the hell, you know, nether realm that Halloran's trapped in. And all the while he is still in a form with the kids. So just how powerful is he? Is this breaking the lore of Pennywise can be in multiple places at the same time and manifested as a physical thing in multiple places in the same time?
I mean, I think there it is a good question. I wondered that too.
Yeah.
Because right away when Maddie is in this tent, which I don't believe we had seen the tent before, right? That tent is just suddenly at the top of the in the platform on the standpipe. And it's an orange tent. I think orange is kind of the marker of Pennywise. Just like the little buck teeth.
Right.
When you see those on somebody, you know it's Pennywise.
Yeah.
But the I thought, okay, is this really Maddie? I kind of suspected it was not him. But I was deluded by the notion that Pennywise doesn't maintain one form for very long. You know, he kind of shapeshifts and then lashes out at you and then dissipates. But he's playing a part here. I definitely think that this expands the lore. It doesn't necessarily contradict anything for me.
Right.
There are a couple of things in the episode that I think if you wanted to raise questions about the logic, if you wanted to be one of those like, you know, push your glasses up to the bridge of your nose and excuse me, you know, John Frink it. I think you could. For instance, when Rudy and Leroy are in the sewers together, when Leroy sees his wife, Rudy doesn't. He doesn't see Charlotte. And so do you also see this? Or am I hallucinating, is a test for Pennywise. And yet all of the 60s losers see Maddie. So they're not, is this a matter of Pennywise chooses how to expand his manifestation into the minds of the people he's confronting? Can he pick and choose this person and not that person? I think, I don't think that it's 100% inconsistent, because if you think about the novel, wasn't it Richie in the library who sees Pennywise and sees the balloons popping and the blood is actually hitting the faces of the patrons, but nobody is any the wiser? So I think that I think the rules are that Pennywise decides how you see him and when. I've already said that in other episodes.
It can't be. My thought is that perhaps, you know, because people have brought this up, you know, in I've had conversations about the show with some friends, and people brought up, it's like, so wait a minute, I thought Leroy's superpower, you know, this damage to his brainstem or whatever, like that took away his fear. Like, I thought that he just wasn't going to be scared about anything, but he's shown his being scared for, you know, his son being pulled under. He's shown like that fight or flight thing. So what if what's happening to Leroy in his head has actually unlocked his ability to see Pennywise's manifestations when others can't?
I think if you know anything about this kind of amygdala damage or malforming, the amygdala is a part of your brain that is the fight or flight mechanism, right? It's meant to protect you. And if you've ever seen the film Free Solo, the documentary about the guy who climbs the mountains in Yosemite without any rigging, they did a brain scan of him and they're like, oh, your amygdala like is under functioning. So things like when you're, say you're on a balcony and you look over the edge and you feel that, whew, that hollow feeling of like, I'm not in danger of falling, but my body is like back away from the edge. This guy, the climber in that story, doesn't feel that. And but that doesn't mean that he doesn't, like if you throw a rock at him, he's not going to dodge, right? Like it's just like a matter of sensitivity rather than you don't feel this at all. Like if you didn't feel any fear, you would be an automaton. Like you wouldn't be a human being. So I think with Leroy, the way my mind wrapped around it is, he can feel fear. Like if a car is going to crash into him, he can feel alarm. He just isn't susceptible to the kind of deer in the headlights moment where he freezes, you know, And if you notice, he takes action when he's afraid.
Yeah. I wonder then if it can be explained because he knows he's been filled in a way that the other soldiers haven't. But then again, the other soldiers see the Uncle Sam, right? So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it's an inconsistent thing or if it's just a cherry picking what's better for a scare moment. You know, I don't know.
Notice that Leroy's fears are not things are not possibilities that his imagination conjures. Mm. Like the way Marge sees the slugs overtaken by parasites, and right. then like that gets into her head. With Leroy, his fears are his wife being harmed, yeah. his son being harmed. They're very terrestrial fears. They're very realistic fears. Not like a werewolf is going to get me, or a demonic Uncle Sam is going right. to surge out of the darkness. I think if you're those soldiers and you're like, am I being marched into a meat grinder? Mm-hmm. You start to question, like, is my country just like, I'm trying to defend my country here through my service. Am I being defended by my country? And is Uncle Sam on my side? You know, that's where that fear comes from. So I thought that was kind of a cool way for Pennywise to pop out of the dark and, mm-hmm. and be that famous, you know, I want you, recruiting poster from World War II. But I think his fears, and to get back to the multitasking that Pennywise does, mm-hmm. yeah, I think he's pretty fucking powerful, apparently. Like, he can make himself appear to be this kid. He can be Uncle Sam, skeletal Uncle Sam in the sewers. He could capture Halloran in a kind of phantom zone. Mm-hmm. And I really like the Halloran stuff because mm-hmm. I think Chris Chalk's performance is amazing. He reverts to, like, a little boy the way he is around his grandma. He goes right back into that headspace of being a kid, and he has a scary grandpa. Mm-hmm. And the box, the lock box that he has, that is a callback to another Stephen King book, but a more recent one, Dr. Sleep.
Because
I don't think the box was in The Shining. Do you remember
that notion? No, that was definitely an invention for the novel that, like, Mike Flanagan, like, jumped in with both feet when he did the adaptation and, like, really expanded on that. But, yeah.
And my son was asking me, like, what's the box about? And I'm like, well, in The Shining, which you haven't gotten to yet, and in Dr. Sleep, which you definitely haven't gotten to, Halloran tells Danny, and we'll say this for the listeners who might not be familiar, he says, you can capture these pictures in a book, these things that scare you. Mm-hmm. You have the power of your shine power allows you to, in a sense, lock them away.
Yeah.
And I think what Pennywise has done here is he has put Halloran in that box. Mm-hmm. He has created a box for Halloran because Halloran's body disappears. He plunges into the water mm-hmm. and then he's seeing hallucinations, mm-hmm. phantoms, but they can't find him either. It's not like he's just sitting there zoned out.
Right.
He's gone. Yeah. And so Pennywise is seeing him, and Game is recognizing Game. Like, oh, you have the power to create images in people's minds and manipulate them and read their thoughts. Like, all right, I can do that too, and I'm going to put you in a box. Mm. And so that's the box that Halloran's in. And then his own box is open at the very end.
Yes, and what does that release? And that is a question. We're jumping all over the place here, but I mm-hmm. don't know if we'll circle back to it. I think I'll forget, knowing me. So I want to go mm-hmm. to the very, very end of this episode, which has Leroy is about to shoot his son because he thinks he has that great moment. Anything that you shouldn't be down in the sewer is going to be this threat.
And he's shot his wife, or the image of his wife in uh-huh. Pennywise form. He's already done that.
And his friend, who's been had his back this whole time, realizes, he's like, I can see Will, his son, too, and he jumps in front of the gun to stop Leroy from shooting his own son. And that ties into Halloran because the very last thing that we see, and, you know, this guy dies in the tunnel, you know, took the bullet and, you know, saved him from killing his kid, has a nice tearful goodbye, and you see his body is carried out by Leroy, right? But the button on this episode is Dick Halloran leaving the sewers, walking out after his box was opened by the entity. And what does he see? He sees for the first time a ghost. This is the first time we've actually seen him see a ghost. He's seen apparitions of his grandma. I don't think that's a ghost, and not in the way I think that the ghost that he sees is of the soldier that just died, the one that jumped in front of the bullet, you know. And and I think that's a ghost in the Shining sense of the ghost, right? This is the wandering spirit of somebody who just died traumatically, right? And so my thought is that opening up the box has opened up this ability that he locked away to actually see this stuff. And maybe, you know, if you extrapolate that out into The Shining, he is more sensitive to the ghost stuff than he would have been because it had previously, that ability has been locked away. So Pennywise, in a weird way, maybe helps feed, you know, you feed the Overlook, in if you want to look at it that way, right?
He expands his perception, yeah.
Right.
I think the grandma is a manifestation of his actual grandma. Like, I think in the bathroom scene that we saw in this episode, I think that whole situation is Pennywise.
Yes.
But when grandma appeared to him in the swirling cyclone of bodies above Pennywise's lair, I think that was his grandma, like, reaching from the beyond, like,
and tries,
like,
to warn him from the edge of the woods or whatever. Yeah.
From the woods, like, get out, like, you're going too deep, you're going too far.
But I think that's an extension of her shine, right? In much the same way that that's expanded upon in Dr. Sleep, right?
Yeah. Halloran appears to Danny as a ghost.
The dead,
you know,
can appear. But I don't think she's a ghost. I think that that's a wholly different thing, in the same way that this is the soldier he sees as a ghost. And that's the first time we've seen him. And the way he reacts to seeing it is this kind of befuddlement, right? It's not this, like, oh, shit, here we go again or whatever. This seems like a new experience for him. So I think that that's a really interesting
thing.
And
So you think he's out of the bathroom, out of that Pennywise box, when he walks out of the sewers and he sees this, he sees, I said the character was Rudy, the actor is Rudy Mancuso, his character is Paulie Russo. Uh-huh. So he sees Paulie.
Right.
And you think that's reality. He's walking out, actually physically walking out of there.
I took that at face value. I might be wrong. I've been wrong in the past, but.
No, I think so too.
Face value. I mean, we know that Halloran's got to eventually get out of Derry and escape, or else the Muschietti's are fucking it up for all the rest of Stephen King continuity. So,
well, that maybe that's what's in the box is one of the things Chris Chalk and I talked about when I did my interview with him is Halloran comes from New Orleans, which is a place of spirituality and
honoring
the dead, sort of pagan spirituality, voodoo and magic and ghosts. And he's like, but those were ghosts, Chris told me, like, that he's familiar with, like, that's Auntie right down the street. I know her, it's okay. But I wonder if Halloran, if the, what's opened from that box is this ability to see the dead, that maybe that's the thing as a young boy that he put into the box, like, I don't want to see these ghosts, I don't want to see people who've died, sort of like the kid from Sixth Sense who sees dead people. Like, he didn't want that. He was tired of that. So maybe what the box opens is the full scale of The Shining, that he can now ghosts can see him too and talk to him and interact with him. I like that idea.
I think that's the implication. Notion. We'll see if they expand upon it, because that could add a whole, like, I need to get the fuck out of here, you know, layer for Halloran. That's going to be a lot for him to deal with, Pennywise on top of all that stuff. The other reveal that I want to talk about before we, like, end on our Dat Boy Pennywise reveal is Madeline Stowe. Lily goes to her for help at a certain point, and it reveals that she is Mrs.
Kirsch.
The Mrs. Kirsch, who Pennywise took the form of in It Chapter 2 as the old lady that that gives Bev some tea. And
it gets straight out of the book. This is a king. This isn't an addition. Mrs. Kirsch was who Bev encounters when she visits her old apartment.
Yep. Yep. And what I believe started just as a way, it's like, oh, we wanted to get, I wanted to give a way to make it look like she can misread the name because it says Marsh when she rings the doorbell. And then the old lady answers and she looks back and it actually says Kirsch. So I think, and which is close to Marsh, it's close enough to where, oh, I can make that mistake. And then it all kind of extrapolated from that. But if, but it's not only revealed that Madeline Stowe is playing Mrs. Kirsch, married to Mr. Kirsch, the butcher that we meet. Who doesn't seem as nice, by the way, in the little moment we get with him in this.
The mask is off, yeah.
The mask is off. He's way more of like, where's my dinner woman kind of person. It's also revealed that she is the one that Ronnie's father has been having the affair with. So another reveal, this has been an episode of reveals and we're about to get to the big one, the one that everybody's been waiting for. So I wanted to bring up that I think we're going to be getting a lot more of that in the Madeline Stowe side of things soon. And, especially if the, version that Pennywise, you know, kind of plays in It Chapter 2 or in the book of Mrs. Kirsch, where she's talking about her father being the Bob Gray apparition. I'm sure we'll see a little bit more of that, and maybe she has a deeper connection to all that stuff. And and
we don't want to say too much about that.
And the zipper,
but I think
the zipper has gone across. I want to reiterate here. I haven't seen any of the further episodes, but Brez, I think, has. He's seen one that's down the line. So if you're hearing a little silence, it's him going.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil things for people, but Bob Gray was a part of the book. Yeah. It's who Pennywise says he is. Yeah. I'm just a guy. It never made a ton of sense. It's not intended to make sense. Mm-hmm. It's meant to make the kids think maybe this is, and the reader go, is this just some weird human predator, like some psycho child killer in the woods and the sewers? Yeah. Or is this a shapeshifter? And Bob Gray is the name he takes or gives himself. But the Muschietti's have already said that where he gets this name is going to be explored. Who is Bob Gray? Mm-hmm. What is this identity that Pennywise grabs onto?
Right.
And, you know, I'll say no more about that, but it's an intriguing thing. And, I really like that Madeline Stowe is giving us a new perspective on Mrs. Kirsch. I always wondered, is Mrs. Kirsch real in that grown up Bev moment?
Mm.
She definitely, like, her face gets weird and she turns into a Pennywise manifestation, but is she real? And I think now I have to believe she's not. That this is a further reflection of someone Pennywise encountered in the past and is taking the shape of. Because I don't know that Bev even knew Mrs. Kirsch, right?
No, this is a complete stranger.
I remember you.
My read in the book was it was a complete manifestation by Pennywise. Yeah. That it wasn't. It wasn't a psychological torment, you know, angle. It wasn't. I thought it was just a completely made up person. So yeah. You know,
it's like the way AI grabs real people's pictures and makes a new one. Like that's what Pennywise does. It's like, I'm going to take the identity of this person and kind of use it. Because also Madeline Stowe, is 67 years old in real life.
Oh, wow.
And, can we just say fabulously beautiful. Some people like Brad Pitt, Madeline Stowe, like they're ageless and timeless, but she's 67. And so if you're going to extrapolate the timeline, add 60 some years to, where she is now, she would be like 130 years old in the time when the losers come back to Derry as grown-ups in the Muschietti universe.
Right.
So yeah, it's got to be a manifestation.
Oh, it's but is it based on this real person, which very well might be? So
seems like it is.
All right, so we We've avoided it for too long, but this is the moment that everybody has been waiting for. You know, this isn't, we don't get a glimpse of Dat Boy. He shows up in all of his glory. Bill Skarsgård chews the scenery. He's in his element. He's stalking kids through the sewers. This is what we've been waiting for.
This guy's pom-poms.
He did. He's and he makes a grand entrance. And the reveal of Pennywise is so choice. It is, you know, this great moment where all the kids are, you know, they're tripping balls in the sewer, which is a fucking hilarious thing.
I love that the mother's little helper was really a bad move, and they took three of them, so they're like,
they are
feeling it.
Yeah, they're going with it. And they're giggly, and the Cuban kid gets to hold the hand of his crush and like all this stuff, and he's like, oh, this is sweet. It's very cool. This is very Stephen King shit too. He would totally write, you know, these kids tripping out together scene. And they're wandering through. They get to a point where they're kind of at a dead end, and Maddie's leading them. The whole thing is that Maddie was like, I would rather go, you know, go back into the sewer than go to the cops and go, because they're going to make me go back home. And what I face at home was worse than what was in the sewer. And you know, which we find is now is kind of a manipulation to get them all, you know, get the entire group. You know, he just essentially Uber Eats those kids, you know, he's having them delivered right to his front door. And they get to a point where they start to find the bodies of the kids that were killed in that first episode, including Phil, who like, oh my God, Phil's dead. Thank God. He's like, oh, and then they find another body, and that body is of Maddie, who has been dead. And then you get the reveal, and it's done in such a great way where he's singing his weird nursery rhyme. He's swinging around the pole. Yeah, and his head starts opening up and with teeth and all this stuff. And then he morphs into Pennywise. And he has a great first line too, which he's like, duck and cover, kiddos, or whatever.
He strikes like a Black Widow superhero pose, and like there's lights emanating from behind. It's a great like in comics they call that the splash page, right?
Yes,
the great spread that shows like a really dramatic moment. So they give Pennywise a good entrance. You know, in hindsight, maybe we should have recognized Maddie as Pennywise right away. He literally crawls out of a big orange tent. I think it's, I don't think we see the tent before this. It's not like the kids have a tent up there. So, you know, I think Pennywise sometimes can't help but tell on himself.
Yep. And then all havoc is wrecked. I mean, it's worth noting that this is also really well structured, because you have kind of the Star Wars thing going on here, where all the storylines are converging in one spot. So you have the military doing their thing, Leroy's story, Dick's story, all that's happening. And then you have Joshua's character, who has the artifact. And once all the shit starts going down, he bolts. He just gets out of there, and the military fires on him, and it causes him to drop the artifact. And I thought, this is going to be bad news for him. But what it turned, and it might still well be, maybe he got out, maybe he didn't, but he lost his protection. But thankfully he did, because that saves Lily's life. And it's another great moment where she's trapped. One end of the sewer is open, and Pennywise is down on that side, and the other end is grated, and she is up against the grate. Everybody else, all the other kids, scattered and got out, nearly shot by Will's father, but got out, and poor Lily's left in the sewer, and Pennywise does what Pennywise is gonna do, and he's tormenting his meal, and it's not until he gets right up on her that he realizes that that talisman, the protection, is at her feet, and he can't pass it. And and he's mid transformation. He's about to eat this poor girl, but you know, he's done this. I'm going to terrify you. So once again, the pills shit never worked. Even taking three of them, she was still terrified enough where she was about to become dinner. But
I like again, this is them feeling around the edges, and you know, something. Sometimes your hypothesis is right, and sometimes it's not. You've got to do the experiment to find out.
But can I just tell you, like, I know that this is bordering on the member berries nostalgia bullshit that, you know, has kind of riddled fandom, but It's so nice to be in the sewers and hear Bill Skarsgård's chuckle and his little Pennywise laugh and watching him just chew the scenery. This is what people have been waiting for. Do you think that it was worth holding on to going more than halfway through this series before giving them the full Pennywise? Or do you think that's what makes this this like work so well?
No. Pennywise is not the Terrifier. The Terrifier is a chump compared to Pennywise.
Big words, Mr. Terrifier. I didn't say that. That was all Anthony Breznican.
I'm just saying in terms of icon status, I like that Pennywise is not always Pennywise. Like, we use Pennywise interchangeably for It, but it's called It.
Right.
The book sold itself on that weird green hand coming out of the sewer. Didn't have a clown on the front. The clown is one of Pennywise's forms. He's a great one. He's the top of the call sheet on the Pennywise character list. But I love that they held back. We don't want this to be the Pennywise show. We've seen a dozen variations on It up until this point.
Right.
And I am so grateful for that. These people who are complaining that we didn't get Pennywise, where's Pennywise? Can you guys sit the fuck down? Like, reminds me, like, years and years ago, my wife and I went to a concert in the park, and Don McLean, you know, was playing at the concert in Burbank. And the whole fucking time, these ladies behind us are like, play American Pie! Play American Pie! And we're like, I'm pretty sure Don McLean is going to close with American Pie. Right? Like, you don't always play your greatest hit right at the top of the show.
Right.
And also, we've gotten some cool new versions of Pennywise slash It.
Yeah.
Fans need to cool it. Fans do not always know what is best.
Yeah.
They're like my cat, George, friend of the King cast who likes to make an appearance. She will yowl at me for more soft food. She's an old lady now, so she's missing some teeth. She can only eat the soft food. She wants it. She wants it. She wants it. And I'll give it to her. But if I give it to her every time she asks, she will yak it up and get sick of it. And she will eat too much. And that is what fans are like. They're like my toothless old lady cat, George. They yowl for more Pennywise. If they got all, if it was Pennywise, Pennywise, Pennywise from the start, they would be so sick of Pennywise. Instead, it's like, awesome to see you, man. Yeah. Cool reveal.
Yeah.
Well, that's my rant about fandom.
Say, there's Brez antagonizing Art the Clown and calling him a little punk-ass bitch and also trying to put all the It fans in their place.
Yeah.
I totally get it. I can see the impatience when you're selling this entire thing on imagery of the clown and then holding him for so long. You know, they know what they're doing, but I think the point is that, like, now if they hide Pennywise for the rest of the season and we get this moment, then a bit at the end, I think that's a little bit of a cheat, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. And I'm saying this completely from a point of ignorance. So, you know, I think that it does make this episode pop where we finally get to see not just a shadow, not just a silhouette, not just a hand. This is him doing, you know, him in the form that we all love with Bill Skarsgård still, you know, in prime form. This isn't like, you know, him. It's like if you try to slap the Freddy Krueger makeup on Robert Englund today, it's just like, oh, man, you know, no, I think it's, and maybe it'd still work. That dude's talented. But, you know, at a certain point, you're like, okay, that's past the prime. And he's still, Bill Skarsgård's still in prime Pennywise form here.
He still is.
And he still delights in the torture and torment. And it's just so nice to see him back and to see him doing his thing, hunting those kids, you know. We missed it.
So let me put this, let me speak your language and cross into your personal territory. Can you imagine watching Jaws and going, hey, it's called Jaws. There's a shark on the poster. It's eating that girl. How come we don't get the shark until 2/3 of the way through the movie?
Nah.
Like when Jaws finally breaches the surface And Roy Scheider goes, "You're going to need a bigger boat." Like, that is this moment with Pennywise. Like, you don't want Jaws throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, you
got it. That's part of the fun. Yeah, well,
and this is about the last. I feel like this is like as much as they could try the patience of the people that are tuning in to this. Of like, okay, we get it. You know, that's creepy. Where's the clown? So I think that they realize that they were right at the edge, because I've seen so many people the last episode going, "All right, this is all good and all, but give me that Pennywise." And I feel like that, you know, whether that's realistically earned or not for the audience, at a certain point, that's going to detract from what's actually on screen, because people, you know, the wanting for that, you know, is going to make people impatient with what they're getting, you know. So I think that they've hit it right, and they do it right. It's not just a quick flash. You get, you know, Pennywise doing his thing, and you also get him, kind of scared by this talisman, and he backs away, and so you find a vulnerability too. So it's, I don't know. I think this is a good spot for it, and I look forward to seeing what Bill Skarsgård does in the next few episodes. How much he appears.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm down for more.
Definitely, man. So so I guess that leaves us open for next week, and thank you all for joining, and we will be back next week to talk about the next episode.
Later.